The same thing was the minimum lot size, and I'm not hung up on the 10 or 5 or whatever it is. But the suggestion there was that the people who are allowed to build on marginal land that's next to a resource land, either ag or forestry, be encouraged by some method to not build right next to the resource. So to move it in somehow so that there isn't the potential conflict all the time with the practices that are carried on in the resource land, the spraying, the field burning, whatever it happens to be that they are next to. And Elizabeth maybe had better recommendation. I don't know whether you wrote any better words than what we had here or not.
I didn't write down anything. I was just the way I conceived of being able to do it is to require, you can't require a county to require the applicant to place their dwelling on a certain location in the property because you have no idea what that property looks like. It may be a river bottom, you know, the farthest place from the resource land around it. So really all you could do would be to require them to do some kind of site review and locate the dwelling in the place on the property that minimizes the impact it would have on surrounding, or minimize the effect the surrounding agriculture would have on it, whichever way you wanted to state it. And then you'd have to give the local jurisdiction the kind of discretion to work with the applicant and find a place, keeping in mind how much road they might have to build to do it, all of those things. I don't know whether you'd want to balance that or whether you'd want to make only one criteria, and that was minimizing the impact, however you wanted to do it. But I cannot conceive of any way of making an absolute mandatory where you shall place it. It's just going to have to be sort of a standard that they use.
Madam Chair.
Representative Trainer.
Could this issue be addressed by the county and their zoning ordinance with setback requirements?
I don't know how you do it with setback, because you might be dealing with a 1,000-acre parcel or a 10-acre parcel, and so they wouldn't be able to have a setback.
Representative Van Leeuwen's amendment would, you know, we looked at 20 acres if it was next to the resource, 10 acres if it was next to land that could be classified as marginal, or the inner portion of that land. Her amendment would, a 10-acre lot size density shall be allowed where marginal land abuts both designated resource land and marginal land, or land that would qualify as marginal, provided that dwellings and lots are clustered away from the resource area so as not to interfere with resource activity. What's the committee's pleasure on that?
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
I really understand what she's saying, and then I listen to council, and I don't know if it's working or not, but does everyone understand what we're talking about? In other words, you could have buildings clustered closer to a farm on a 20-acre plot than you could on a 10, yeah. So I think there's merit in it.
I think
regardless of the size of the parcel.
Yeah, I think there's merit in it. I think it's how do you enforce that, or how do the counties enforce that, or tell someone where to put their place if you don't take into consideration, like Elizabeth was saying, how far they have to drive back. Is it a long, narrow parcel? Is it, you know?
Could the planner help us? Maybe they have a similar requirement already they're using.
Russ?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, in citing homes near resource lands, most of us, I think, have put something in the ordinance that's the equivalent of either a siting criteria whereby, as a condition of approval, you require that they put the house in a certain location and that's negotiable to achieve an overall intent, or, like we do in Marion County, we establish a guideline of 100 feet from a house to farming, or 200 feet from a house to forestry, but they give the planning director the authority to modify that if a lesser distance will provide equivalent buffering. So there are ways of dealing with that in your local ordinances, but it does need to be a flexible mechanism.
Thank you. Okay, if...
Madam Chair.
Is there a motion?
No, there's no motion. We want to get through this bill, so I would hope that we move as quickly as possible.
May I ask a question? Anybody else interested in refining this besides me?
No, we have no motion before.
No, we have my proposal, but it's not turned into a motion yet.
Sure. Representative Anderson.
I don't know. I'm just brainstorming again, but if we could tell the county governing body to develop ordinances and the buffer zones to develop regulations so as not to impact farming practices, or we'll leave it at that or something.
Any other discussion?
Madam.
Representative Parkinson.
The nuts and bolts in it would be whether you would allow a 10-acre spot next to a resource land, 10-acre parcel,
yes,
versus 20.
Yes.
Well, that brings up another question then. What about the 20 acres as it's written into this bill that would have to be next to the resource land? I mean, there's nothing addressed in there as to where any dwelling would be located, is there?
No.
I mean, what I was thinking of was addressing this sort of thing. I said the 10 acres wasn't mine. I don't care what size it is. If it's adjacent to the resource land, I think there should be some sort of an encouragement not to build right on the edge, so that there isn't the impact when the forester goes to, or the forestry people go to cut the trees or something, and, oh, you're cutting down my view or whatever.
Rush, you deal with this sort of ordinances right now, is that correct?
Yes.
You deal with this through ordinances right now?
That's right.
Do you think we need to do anything in regard to, even if we stayed with the 20, 10 acres, put something in there that the dwellings are away from the resource areas, not to interfere, or just leave it as is?
Madam Chairman, I think most counties are going to view this as a non-EFU zone. They're going to have some of the same concerns regarding buffering the houses from the EFU zones. I think most counties will provide setbacks. I guess the question is whether the committee feels that a specific setback or some legislative direction is needed to encourage the counties to do that. I would think most of the planners would at least propose that at the local level and be inclined to get it adopted in their ordinances.
Representative Anderson.
I wonder if we aren't making a mistake assuming that the 20 acres is squared. In theory, it could be 100 feet wide and whatever that goes long and still be a buffer zone.
Yes.
So where are we? I mean, I guess you come back to using by ordinance where you go.
Gotcha.
Representative Trahan?
I guess if it's the desire of the committee to address this issue, I could be comfortable with a statement that said something like local governments are encouraged to provide the dwellings and lots, and using her language in the last part, are clustered away from the resource area so as to not to interfere with resource activities, so that we gave them a bit of direction perhaps, but still left the flexibility on how they would apply that to an individual parcel or in an individual county.
Is that a motion?
Yeah.
Representative Cahan moves, and Elizabeth, you'll have to come up with the language that we encourage the counties to adopt ordinances to provide that dwellings and lots are clustered away from the resource areas so as not to interfere with resource activities. Any objection to that motion?
Can we hear anybody speak to one? Why wouldn't it be a good idea?
May I? Oh.
Representative Van Leeuwen?
I appreciate Representative Trahearn's putting it into a form that I think is acceptable to all of us, and basically to accomplish what I wanted to do.
Is there anyone that would like to speak in the audience against that motion? Is there any objection in the committee?
Does anybody care?
So ordered. Page 3, section 6, Representative Anderson wanted to talk about that a minute. I thought we were through with marginal lands. I hope that's the last one.
Madam Chair, I discussed this with Representative Anderson, the Associated Urban Industries, Representative Coastal Zone Management. All three of these people feel that Section 6, top page 3, is not necessary. The reason I think it's not necessary is the Senate argued for about 2 weeks over Gold 5 issues in 2295 and finally decided it was the better part of valor to send the bill to the floor without any legislation in that regard. Now here we are again addressing Goal 5, protection of wildlife, and giving some direction. Although it says the goals may require, if they require, if the commission puts it in there that they are going to have to manage these resource areas on the county level, then we're right back to where we are, that the counties have to manage the bird nests, the wetlands, etc. I had in 2650 certain language in there that I thought took care of the problem, and that said the counties deferred using present law and state agencies. We have present laws on how we handle endangered species. We have the Fish and Wildlife Commission we defer to, the Forestry Department that we defer to, etc. In all this regard, I fear that every time a bird nest is reported, they run to county commissioners, and all of a sudden, they have to make the decision, are you going to prohibit marginal land building in 100 acres, or 200 acres, or 10 acres? You know, someone finds a snail darter or a five-leaf clover that can run into county commissioners. And it really puts a burden on the county when it really is necessary to do that.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Priestley. Let me join Representative Priestley in a good round of laughter here first, but then. I think it's interesting to note, I guess we're all local control when it benefits us, and we're all state control when local control doesn't benefit us. And I think it's important just to put that right squarely on the table. I think that's an important provision, and I think that LCDC ought to be able to have the flexibility to be able to amend goals to require more stringent density for those kinds of issues, and I think it would be irresponsible for us to pull that language. I would oppose that.
Representative Priestley and Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask Beth if she would explain to me whether or not under current law, local governments could or could not impose more stringent density or use restrictions.
I think Elizabeth would be better able to answer that. I believe so.
All the marginal lands criterion here are the bottom line. The minimum in any jurisdiction could be more strict and impose tighter controls.
So with or without the language, then they could require local governments to impose stringent densities.
Right. This language would not require, but specifically authorize the commission to amend the goals to require this. As Ron Eber testified, all the goals are still there, and the commission would probably have this authority anyway, but this makes it real clear that they do. You might want to do some legislative history if you take this out, and to make it clear that by taking it out, you're not saying we don't want them to have that authority. You're just saying you already have that authority.
Now, Jonathan, I guess in response to that, I think you could go both ways. If the authority is already there, my preference would be to keep it in then if it doesn't affect anything. I don't know, maybe Andy could speak.
Do we have a motion on the floor?
Madam Chair, there's been more in discussion. I have no problem with telling the commission to amend the goals. I have the problem starting with the fifth line. It's just to require local government to do something about it. That's where I have the problem. It's already in the goal. I would like to put it on the spot, but Marianne Hutton to come up and maybe make it a little more clear what I'm trying to project.
Clarification. Why the fifth line?
Why the fifth line?
Yeah.
Fifth word. I'm sorry. Require local government. I have no problem with amending goals in this regard, but to require local government to take over density restrictions and protection of wildlife, when we already have state agencies in there. Maybe I'm trying to gobble it up, but...
Representative Anderson, it seems to me if the goals are amended by the commission, local government has to do what the amended goals say.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I apologize. I wasn't in the room for the first part of this discussion. With regard to subsection 6, as I understand is what you're discussing before you, it's my impression of what the intent probably is there, is that the other goals still apply to marginal lands,
yes,
whatever those goals may have in them.
That's
and there might be a more direct way of saying just that without raising the red flag and perhaps muddying the waters with regard to these specific requirements that you might lay out. Those existing goals do not have, for instance, specific density requirements in them. They have requirements for a certain process or requirements for certain choices to be made by local governments. They don't have those kinds of specific standards or requirements in them. I think it's probably not necessary that section isn't, because obviously all the other goals apply. And when the commission adopts amendments to the existing agricultural lands goal or forest land goal, whatever it might be, in response to this bill, they obviously are going to have to take into account the existing goals and make them consistent. So I think it's our feeling that this section is not necessary. And if it was the intent to just say that all the other goals obviously apply to marginal lands, there would be a much cleaner, simpler way of saying that, or just stating that intent and not having a section in there that muddies the water.
Sure.
Representative Anderson.
I would move to strike and replace section 6 as a statement that effect that all goals apply to marginal lands.
Any discussion?
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley?
Would there be someone who wants to speak against that from the interest parties?
Dick?
Yeah.
Dick Bennett from 1,000 Friends. I think Marianne has accurately stated what the intention of that language is. I think that language accomplishes it in lawyerese. I don't think it would... I think it would be consistent with the intent of the language to do what Representative Anderson is suggesting. It simply needs to be said that just because the legislature says that you can have these kinds of densities and houses on marginal lands, it may be that at marginal lands is also big game wildlife habitat and they're still subject to Goal 5. That's really all that's intended there. And I'm sure it can be reworded to a way that isn't confusing to people on the committee.
But all goals apply too.
That's right.
Representative Van Loen.
Just a suggestion on that, you would want to say that existing goals.
Well, any new goals that are adopted or amended, you have to go with all of it. You can't.
In existence. Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
It appears to me to be a good motion because we're not naming all the other goals in here. And it looks like it might place extra emphasis. I think I'd support Anderson's motion.
Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
What it's doing is not requiring local government to do research. It's requiring them in allowing construction or minimum lot sizes that the amended goals may require them to have larger lots, or to perhaps not allow a permitted or conditional use. And that seems to be consistent with the role of local government. I don't see any problem with language as it is.
Any further discussion?
Sure.
Representative Anderson.
I guess if you're going to require my county to manage wildlife habitat,
where does it say manage?
You're going to manage it by reducing the density around the bird nest. It's obvious. It says require local government to impose more stringent density.
May, you forgot the may.
No, that says that's the commission. If the commission says it, then the local government is required to do it.
Well, I believe your motion was that you delete Section 6 and
say all goals apply.
All goals apply to marginal lands and amended goals.
Excuse me, Dick Minner, if you're going to say that, shouldn't you say that all goals except 3 and 4? Because you don't want somebody who's proposing a marginal lands designation to have to take an exception from goals 3 and 4. That's what you're doing here legislatively.
All right.
Elizabeth?
Do you have a preference, Dick?
Friendly.
Can I ask Elizabeth what the difference is?
Either we should have left that in, Dick.
Elizabeth, what's the difference? What's the difference between this language and the language that's proposed?
Well, this language.
I mean, other than.
Would then just clarify that all the other goals still have to be taken into consideration. And if there's a natural resource issue that it has to be dealt with and that the marginal lands language doesn't automatically override everything else, it only overrides 3 and 4.
Okay. Any further discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll?
Aye.
No.
Representative Parkinson?
Aye.
Representative
Priestland?
No.
Representative Fairhurst?
No.
Representative
Van Roon?
Aye.
Representative
Anderson?
Aye.
Chamberlain?
No.
Changed to aye.
Rep.
No.
Changed
to no.
Purposes of reconsideration?
I think you'd already dropped the gavel, Madam Chair.
Well, let's let him change.
Motion fails. Let's go to EFU, please.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
One little quick one here. I was reading over here the allowable uses in marginal land, and I think I understand everything except what's in 215, 213, 1 and 2. And kind of a funny little thought come into my head. Say between Prineville and some other little town, a couple of doctors, one maybe from each town, want to get together and build a little clinic to serve the area. Could they do that on marginal lands? Did it have to be in this 215, 213, I think? Could it be done through an exception or something?
What page in line? Page 4, line 1, 2.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 215, 213, 1 and 2 are the permitted and local discretionary uses in an EFU zone, and they relate to home occupations, hardships, commercial activities in conjunction with farm use, those types of uses. It doesn't allow the kind of use Representative Parkinson was referring to.
Even an exception? What about a hospital? Could it be done through the exception process?
Yeah, it would have to take the goal exception.
So the doctor's clinic could be done that way. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the time.
Okay.
May I ask a further question that relates to that? That's allowed now under the EFU. If we went to the EFU proposal that we're dealing with in here now, would it be allowed?
What's allowed under EFU, Representative Van Loan?
Well, it's not allowed under EFU. They would have to go through the exceptions process.
Right. They could do the same thing on marginal lands.
They could do the same thing under marginal lands.
Sure. All right, Section 5 is where we left off last night. New language is on page 5, sub 2. on attorney's fees in hardship cases only. Representative Parkinson had some questions about that. The counties proposed that. Maybe once again, Russ or Gordon, whomever would like to come up, could explain why you wanted that. And I would like to remind the committee this refers only to hardship cases. So it's very clear.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
A person brings a proceeding against a person because he doesn't think it's a reasonable hardship and loses, then he could get attorney fees. Either side could get attorney fees, right?
Whoever won.
I don't think I have any more questions.
Any problem with that? Representative Van Leeuwen.
I said that I had problems with it when we left committee yesterday, and I still have some problems with it, but explain to me in a nutshell what it does between, well, in that whole section 5.
Well, I will be happy to do that. All it does is if you're a neighbor and someone has a trailer because it's a hardship case and you don't think that it's a legitimate use that they're renting that trailer out, you could take them to court, and if you won, you'd get attorney's fees. If you lost, the other side would get attorney's fees.
May.
May.
Discretionary.
It's discretionary. It says the court may allow.
And that deals with nothing else except the hardship cases.
That's correct. And if the county did not actively defend itself in the case, they would be opted out.
If the county did not actively defend itself.
Right. Representative Priestley.
I'm just wondering, would these attorneys give me some opinion about my preference is that the county would not be encouraged not to take part. That we haven't, that all of us have an interest in them entering as parties into these things for what they feel is just. I mean, representing all of us. Is this going to encourage them not to take part and diminish the socializing process of adjudicating this? Is that any, is there any sense in that? Maybe I'm totally off base. Anybody speak to that?
I think what the problem that was occurring and why this is in here is many times the county simply did not have the resources, manpower, money, whatever it takes, to follow up on some of the hardship cases and to regulate some of the hardship cases. And that this was a way of regulating those hardship cases by putting something like this in here.
And you said this was at the county's request?
This was at the county's request.
Was it?
Yes, Russ.
Don't we need that response on the record if it's going to be made?
Russ? Representative Van Leeuwen, I said, I told her that this was the county suggestion. Would you please?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, Russ Nebon, County Planning Directors. We had some legal counsels and county planners indicate they were concerned that counties might be held liable for costs and expenses assigned by the court if the landowner was found in violation of the hardship conditions. And some of the counties were not participating in the defense, and they didn't feel like they should be liable if the landowner couldn't pay those expenses. And so this is just a little provision that opts the counties out if they get into that situation.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Not to be argumentative or anything, but it would appear to me if a county isn't enforcing its ordinances and doing its duties, that they ought to have to pay part of the costs. Even if you are from Marion County.
Representative Parkinson, it's just my understanding that in some of the counties, the DA's office has got to prioritize his workload. And to the local farmers, this may be a critical issue, and the county should certainly defend it, but the DA is not able to represent the county, and because the county does not show up, and if the landowner is not in a position to pay the assigned costs, then the county would get stuck with it, and we're trying to say that under those circumstances, the county shouldn't have to pay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Parkinson and Representative Hill.
What if the person bringing the suit is indigent? Could an indigent person bring suit?
If they don't have money to hire an attorney, it'd be highly unlikely unless legal aid takes that.
Well, couldn't an attorney take it on a contingency basis?
I don't think this is the kind of case you'd make any money on.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
I think from what you said, what Fred's comment would go with deleting the all the however if the court and so forth. Is that true? My sympathies are to take that out of there. Is that unreasonable? Does anybody else in the committee agree to take out however if the court allows the plaintiff reasonable attorney fees and so forth and cause the counties to act more responsibly in granting the hardship if they know that if they act injudiciously and improperly, that they might be responsible for some of the costs if indeed it's reimbursed?
Representative Priestley, let me and I don't know what's happened in all the counties. I think one of the problems has been that they have acted in a proper manner when they've allowed the hardship to occur.